Encourage you to take a Bible and to turn to Matthew chapter 5. And if you didn't get one of the handouts, if you would please raise your hand. I think Justin maybe is going to look and see if anybody needs to get one of those. Raise your hand and they'll try to get those. This will serve as an outline for both lessons this morning. We're going to try to look at Roman numerals number 1 and 2 in our first lesson, and then we'll look at Roman numerals number 3 and 4, Lord willing, in our second lesson. As was mentioned, I am going to, in the next couple of weeks, be in Alabama for a couple of preaching situations. The first will be a preacher study, and then the second, next week, will be a gospel meeting. But the first thing that I'll be involved in is a study in which the topic is going to be questions pertaining to marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Certainly a very pertinent, challenging kind of issue. And I've been given an assignment that was something that was rather new to me. I haven't had to deal with it very much in my experience. But talking with Brother Brian Haynes, he has not only had to deal with it some up in the area of the country where he lives, up in the Northwest, but also even when he was in New Mexico, he had encountered that. And so this morning we're going to look at this issue. Is the teaching of Jesus on marriage, divorce, and remarriage a part of Old Testament legislation? Now here's what we're looking at. There are essentially four passages in the Gospels in which Jesus teaches things pertaining to marriage, divorce, and remarriage. You'll see Matthew 5, 31 and 32. We'll see Matthew chapter 19, verses 1 through 12, and Mark 10, which both are addressing the same situation, and then Luke chapter 16 and verse 18. And the question is, in these passages, is Jesus simply commenting on Mosaic law, or instead, is he laying down new teaching that will become a part of the law of Christ? Now, what I want to do in our first lesson here is we're going to go through and just look at these texts and familiarize ourselves with them, then compare them with what the law of Moses teaches, and then in our second lesson, we'll try to make some application with that. Matthew chapter 5, verse 31 and 32 comes in the midst of the Sermon on the Mount in a series of what are referred to as antitheses, as Mike mentioned, where he will say, here's what the law of Moses said, or their interpretation of the law of Moses. But then, in a number of places, he will say, but I say to you. In these, it's perhaps important for us to notice, and I didn't ask Mike to do this, but I'm really glad that he did, look at the context around it. Immediately before this teaching on MDR, you'll see that he teaches some things about adultery in the heart in verses 27 through 30. And then it is followed by dealing with the issue of oaths and being honest. We must understand that this issue of marriage, divorce, and remarriage really has to do with an idea of honesty. Are we keeping the word that we make? And it is within this that, as you'll see in the little diagram I put on the handout, I think we can see that what the Lord kind of does, yes, he starts by looking at some things that are in Mosaic law. He'll actually, within this section, kind of interweave the 7th, the 9th, and the 10th of the Ten Commandments. Let's read this text together. Beginning in verse 31 of Matthew chapter 5, it says, furthermore, it has been said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery. Now you'll notice there from verse 31 that he starts by referencing something that was taught in the law of Moses. We're going to see that a little bit later in Deuteronomy chapter 24. The second passage that I'd call to your attention is in Luke chapter 16 and verse 18. If you turn in your Bibles to Luke chapter 16 and verse 18, this one, it's a little unusual in some respects. It doesn't fall in either a discussion that is recorded or in the midst of a larger sermon like the Sermon on the Mount. It is either one of a series of random teachings, or it may be something that comes in response to some derision that the Pharisees offered back up in verse 14. If that's the case, the context here might become pivotal to understand its significance. First, you'll see in verse 15, he'll address God's view of the heart, followed by this statement in which he'll talk about the law and the prophets were until John, verse 16, from that time the kingdom has been preached. And that may be pivotal in helping us answer a question. He'll then talk about how the law won't fail, chapter 16, verse 17, and then it'll go on to the account of the rich man and Lazarus. Now, let's look at this text together in Luke chapter 16 and in verse 18. And let's notice what this says. We'll see some interesting differences in some respects. Verse 18, whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced from her husband commits adultery. Now, unlike what we saw in Matthew chapter 5, verse 32, you'll notice something that is not addressed here, and that is the exception for fornication. I think it's important for us to understand that the general principle of the gospel is that the Lord wants us to honor our marriage covenants. And so we'll see in two passages this morning that the Lord won't address that issue of the exception for fornication. Is that a contradiction? No. It is a record in which one passage will emphasize the principle, the other will deal with the exception. Now, the next two, go to Matthew chapter 19 with me for a moment. There is an occasion that's recorded in both chapter 19 of Matthew and in chapter 10 of the Gospel of Mark that really is the same situation. Jesus, when he's in the little portion of Judea that's actually on the eastern side of the Jordan, is questioned by the Pharisees about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Most likely, they're trying to bait him into taking a position that was debated in their day. You had some that would say the law allowed you to divorce for any reason. One fellow in the first century would say, even if you became more attracted to someone else, you could do it. Others would argue that no, the law of Moses only allowed divorce for fornication. It's likely they're trying to get him to kind of take a position. And it's interesting, his response doesn't exactly do that, I would submit to you. What we'll see here is that Matthew and Mark, while they're recording the same situation, you might notice a little chart I put on the handout in which I kind of compare the two. And you'll see a lot of similarity, but some interesting differences. For example, Matthew will record an element of the question the Pharisees pose that Mark does not. That is, Matthew will record that they specifically ask, can he divorce his wife for any reason? And so Matthew will then address the exception. Mark, while he doesn't address this specific element of it, he does record something later on in the house. I think we've missed that sometimes because sometimes people, as they've looked at chapter 10 and chapter 19, have said, wait, this doesn't seem to mesh. Why doesn't one address the exception? Now, we'll notice why that is. Let's read in Matthew chapter 19, the first 9 verses. Now, it came to pass when Jesus had finished these sayings that he departed from Galilee and came to the region of Judea beyond the Jordan. And great multitudes followed him, and he healed them there. The Pharisees also came to him, testing him and saying to him, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason? And he answered and said to them, have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female? And for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate. They said to him, why then did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce and to put her away? Now you'll recall, Matthew chapter 5, verse 31, Jesus started with that very issue. Here they're asking him about that, verse 8. And he said to them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. And whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery. Now hold your place there in your Bibles, because we're going to come right back to this. But go now to Mark chapter 10. And I want us to notice in Mark chapter 10 that the way in which Mark records the conversation with the Pharisees ending is by simply addressing that statement Matthew also recorded, what God has joined together, let not man separate. But what we must understand is, look with me at verse 10 of Mark chapter 10, because here's the way Mark records the next thing that happened. And in the house, his disciples also asked him again about the same matter. So notice this is a different discussion than exactly what was started in both 19 and in 10 about the matter. So he said to them, whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. And if a woman divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery. Now, notice with me two things. First of all, notice that here Mark records in the house, in this discussion, He also addresses the action on the part of the woman. That becomes significant that we'll talk about in just a moment. But notice what we see here as well. Here in this discussion in the house, he doesn't focus in on the exception. Again, like Luke chapter 16, he's talking about the basic principle. You don't divorce and remarry. Divorce and remarriage under most all circumstances is adultery. Now go back with me to Matthew chapter 19. Because while Matthew deals with that element of the question, Matthew will also deal with something that Mark does not. And it's a little unclear if this is a discussion that happens immediately after his talk with the Pharisees, or if what we're going to read right here is a part of that discussion in the house. Notice with me in verse 10. His disciples said to him, "If such is the case of the man with his wife, it is better not to marry." Now, notice he is there drawing a conclusion. If this is the terms under which marriage exists, if this is the only cause, then it's better not to marry. And so he goes on into this statement. But he said to them, "All cannot accept this saying, but only those to whom it has been given. For there are eunuchs who were born thus from their mother's womb, and there are eunuchs who were made eunuchs by men, and there are eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. He who is able to accept it, let him accept it." Now, I think that's very important. We sometimes don't really include that in our discussions about this. But it's part of it, because Jesus here acknowledges there may be circumstances in which either a person will realize, wait, I can't meet those terms, so I'm not going to marry. Or they may realize, for the kingdom of heaven's sake, they don't have a right to marry. Now, let's look at the way in which these things kind of add up. Because the last thing I want us to do is we're going to eventually kind of draw a comparison between the law of Moses and the law of Christ. But to do that, we need to understand some things about what the teaching in the law of Moses was. And we're going to mainly just look at one passage. I'll call your attention to some others, but look over in Deuteronomy chapter 24. Deuteronomy chapter 24, because this is the passage we've already seen that is referenced in Matthew chapter 5, Matthew chapter 19, and in Mark chapter 10. And what we see here in Deuteronomy chapter 24, verses 1 through 4, in the context of talking about, like in the Sermon on the Mount, honoring vows made to the Lord, in the context of talking about respect for a neighbor's property, chapter 23, and then later, after this teaching, some things about military exemption for the newlywed. In the midst of that, let's read the first four verses of Deuteronomy chapter 24. "When a man takes a wife and marries her, and it happens that she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some uncleanness in her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house, when she has departed from his house and goes and becomes another man's wife, if the latter husband detests her and writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house, or if the latter husband dies who took her as his wife, then her former husband who divorced her must not take her back to be his wife after she has been defiled. For that is an abomination before the Lord, and you shall not bring sin on the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance." We notice here the basic teaching that's a part of Mosaic law. And we're going to talk a little bit more in detail about that in a few moments. But let me just mention to you very quickly some other elements of Mosaic law that pertain to marriage, divorce, and remarriage that have to also fit into this equation. Over in Deuteronomy chapter 22, verse 19 and verse 29, in the midst of some laws governing sins of a sexual nature, we will see one law here mentioned in verse 19, that a man who falsely accused a woman of not being a virgin when they married, if it was a false accusation, if it was true, she was to be put to death. If it was false, he had to marry her and could never divorce her. That's significant. There are some circumstances in which divorce was not permitted. Similar kind of thing in the same chapter, verse 29, a man who lay with an unbetrothed virgin, whether it was consensual or whether it was an assault and a violation, the same way. He had to pay a fine and marry the woman, and again, he could never divorce her. Another law in Leviticus chapter 21, verse 7 and verse 14. In the midst of some laws governing priests, notice a couple of things with me. We'll see that both priests and high priests could only marry virgins. They could not marry one who was a widow or a divorced woman or a defiled woman or a harlot. That becomes interesting because in our questions, if we're going to say, well, what were the terms under which divorce could take place? Some will argue that it was exactly what Jesus taught. If that's the case, then here, this would indicate there would be divorced women among the Israelites, and yet not for fornication, which Mosaic law taught, well, would receive capital punishment. Chapter 22 of Leviticus, verse 13. Here in some laws governing the eating of the holy offering in the homes of a priest, we'll see that it teaches that a priest's widowed or divorced daughter who had returned to her house with no child, she could eat of it. Once again, the inference being they expected that there would be divorced women among the Israelites. Numbers chapter 30 and verse 9, in some laws concerning vows made by women, and the rights and responsibilities of husbands and fathers. Understand that in much of the ancient world, it was the man that held legal rights. What would be the circumstances when you had a divorced woman or a widow? Here, the law once again infers there would be divorced women among them and infers that it teaches very clearly she was responsible for her own vows. The last one I want to mention to you, and I think this becomes a very significant one, Exodus 21 and verse 11. It is talking about some laws pertaining to an Israelite woman that has been sold into slavery. And the law reads that if a man who betrothed his servant, his Israelite female servant, to himself, if he had done that, but then he takes another wife. The law of Moses actually allowed that. However, if he did so, he could not diminish her food, her clothing, or her marital rights. Now, if he did, this passage indicates that she could, without any finding of uncleanness, she could go out free. I think that's significant. It is an allowance for a divorce without a cause of uncleanness, such as we read Deuteronomy 24. Now, I want us to think about this because here's what we want to look at in the last few minutes of our lesson this morning. When we look at the law of Moses and what we find taught in the New Testament, what do we see? And I want to look at this in terms of just some kind of basic issues and basic questions that we might ask. First of all, who could divorce or initiate a divorce? I think this becomes significant because, you remember Deuteronomy chapter 24, we noticed that there it only addresses what the woman could do. Now, we might look at that and think, well, obviously, both the man or the woman is allowed to, right? No. You'll notice in the handout I gave some examples where we have early Jewish writing commenting on their understanding of this, and very clearly they viewed it as only allowing the man to initiate a divorce. Even if there was some cause, the man had to then consent to put away the woman through giving her a certificate of divorce. Now, under the law of Christ, remember in Mark chapter 10, where there Jesus addresses both what the man does and what the woman does. Divorce law is treated equally. What about a second question? What constitutes adultery? Here is a big area where I think we need to recognize a distinction between Mosaic law and the law of Christ. Under Mosaic law, adultery was defined as sexual relations between parties married to someone else. And I cited all the passages there that address that. The only kind of exception to what I'm about to say, maybe in Hosea, there you'll see some examples in which you have spiritual divorce described and the Lord speaking of it as adultery after a divorce has taken place. In general, though, under Mosaic law, it was not counted as adultery when a put-away party married another party. Now, unlike that, as we read in the passages dealing with MDR, Jesus extends the definition of adultery beyond its Old Testament sense to include marriage of one who is an unscriptural marriage that is defined as adultery. And that's important for us to understand. Let's think about another issue. What was or is a lawful cause for divorce? Remember Deuteronomy chapter 24. It mentioned this term. Different translations will put it a little different. New King James puts it some uncleanness. The American Standard put it an unseemly thing. New American Standard and English Standard will put it some indecency. It is a word, a phrase. Here the Hebrew is erva dabar, that literally means a nakedness thing. Now, I'm of the conclusion that what it's talking about is some type of indecency that is not quite as far as actual intercourse or sexual immorality. The reason I say that is because the law of Moses clearly taught that that was punishable by death. On the other hand, when we look at the New Testament, in 5:32 of Matthew and 19:9 of Matthew, we see very clearly the only lawful cause for putting away being listed as fornication, which is clearly action, clearly this kind of sexual immorality to its full extent. Well, what about another question? What about laws of reconciliation? And this is something I think that we need to think about, because remember, under Deuteronomy chapter 24, it was counted as an abomination before the Lord for a put-away woman that had then remarried. If her second husband put her away, could she ever go back to that first husband? No. Now, I would submit to you that would become a strong deterrent. We can't look at Mosaic law and say, well, it just allowed it for any kind of reason. No, it led those men that might casually put away their wives to realize, wait a minute, you do that, you may never be able to marry her. Well, is the same thing brought into the law of Christ? Turn with me over to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. We're going to spend more time with this in our second lesson. But over in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, I want you to notice in a section in which Paul is talking about what he will, it's a section in which he says, not I, but the Lord say. And I think in that he's commenting on the ramifications of what Jesus taught while upon earth. Here, I want you to notice what he says. Start with me in verse 10. It says, now to the married, I command, yet not I, but the Lord, a wife is not to depart from her husband. But even if she does depart, let her remain unmarried, notice, or be reconciled to her husband. And a husband is not to divorce his wife. Now, I want you to notice what is not said there. There is nothing that restates and reinforces that idea that Deuteronomy chapter 24 taught. It is unqualified encouragement to reconciliation. I think we've got to see that as a difference. Well, what about this issue of what we could call certification? Remember, Deuteronomy chapter 24 commanded that the man was to provide his wife with a certificate of divorce, even the second husband, if he put her away, same thing. It's important for us to understand that to give a woman a certificate of divorce in ancient times was essentially sanctioning her right to remarry. I put an example in the handout of a Jewish certificate of divorce that's been discovered from AD 72. And you'll notice in there it essentially says, go and be the wife of another man. Does that help us understand Jesus' wording in Matthew chapter 5, where it describes in verse 32, unlawful putting away, causing her to commit adultery? Under the law of Christ, you won't see anything about certification that is restated. And I think the reason being that the emphasis is on the permanence of marriage. In those cases where there may be a lawful right to put away, we see that we are to follow the laws of the land, and there may be circumstances in which there it becomes more of a contractual thing, not a matter of what you're doing before the law of God. Well, what about the issue of priests and divorced women? We look through that rather quickly. But let's think about some comparisons with that. Remember, only priests and high priests were forbidden from marrying divorced women. Now, as we look at the law of Christ, if Jesus is teaching that all unscriptural divorce and remarriage is adultery, it essentially becomes a prohibition of any of those that are God's people from marrying those that are divorced women. Along the same lines, let's think about that teaching pertaining to the marriage of priests. Under Mosaic law, priests and high priests could not marry those that were not virgins. In other words, they could only marry virgins. That's something that is not restated in the law of Christ for the holy priesthood of believers. There is not that teaching that we find there. This issue of polygamy, while that's not our focus in our study, I think we've got to touch on it just a little bit, because I think it becomes a significant thing. Mosaic law, while it would be a mistake for us to imagine God wanted them to take multiple wives, I don't think that's the case, either in patriarchal time or Mosaic time. There was some allowance and some protection that was offered, both for MDR and for polygamy. We see that very clearly in the text that we noticed there in Exodus chapter 21 and verse 10 through 11. You remember, the man that had an Israelite servant girl betrothed to himself, he could take another wife. However, there's protections that are set down there. Now, I want us to think about that as it pertains to the law of Christ. In our bulletin this morning, I'd encourage you to take a look at it, because I deal with something there that I think is a significant issue pertaining to this. And that is the fact that, as we read in Matthew chapter 19, when Jesus is answering their question about marriage, divorce, and remarriage, you remember he goes and he quotes Genesis 2 and verse 24. But I'd encourage you sometime to look at the text in most of your translations, Genesis 2:24, and compare it with not only Mark 10, Matthew 19, also with Ephesians 5, where Paul will quote the same thing. What you'll find is most of our translations, going from the Hebrew text that reads, "They shall become one flesh," are going from what's called the Hebrew Masoretic text. However, every New Testament quote of that will put it, "The two shall become one flesh." And I submit to you in the bulletin, it's also in your material there, I think this likely reflects the fact that there was a Hebrew original that was present in the first century that read, "The two shall become one flesh." There are ancient translations that reflect that same thing. Now, if that's the case, what does that tell us about the law of Christ on marriage, divorce, and remarriage? It makes it clear, two, not three, four, five, becoming one flesh. And I've given some examples in your handout of early Christian writing that confirms that understanding of that. Levirate marriage is that teaching under Mosaic law in which if a brother died and he hadn't had a son, you remember a brother was to take the wife of that brother that had died and to raise up children. In the event that you were already married, that would have been a sanction for polygamy. What do we see about this as it pertains to the law of Christ? This is not restated. And the two becoming one flesh definition that Jesus offers would preclude that under the law of Christ. This issue of divorce and false accusation, we'll see as well that false accusation that would make it where if you ever did that, you could never divorce, that's not restated under the law of Christ. The issue as well about sexual assault and marriage, where you remember one that lay with an unbetrothed virgin could never divorce her, that's not restated under Christ as well. And then that issue of eunuchs. You might say, well, what does that really have to do with marriage, divorce, and remarriage? You remember the way that Matthew chapter 19 dealt with it after these teachings. Well, I think this is significant for us to notice, because under Mosaic law, one who was a eunuch was not to be allowed to offer sacrifices if he was a priest, nor could he enter into the assembly. It is interesting, though, because not only do we have in Old Testament prophecy, Isaiah chapter 56, verses 3 through 5, a prophecy that the time would come in which the eunuch would no longer be excluded, but also we then have in the conversions that are mentioned in the book of Acts. You remember in Acts chapter 8, the conversion of the Ethiopian eunuch? What it indicates to us is that those who are eunuchs either physically or those that are eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake are no longer excluded from their service in the kingdom. Well, that's what we'll look at in our first lesson this morning, and our second lesson we'll continue it. We haven't dealt this morning with issues pertaining to obedience to the gospel, but if there are those here that have not yet put your faith in Jesus as the Son of God, confessed that faith before men, repented of sin that separates you from God, and been baptized into Christ for the remission of sins, I want to give you the opportunity to do that. Won't you come while we stand and sing?